You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Walao eh!
Regular sessions with Otto and JC.
What the fuck? Yeah,
that's a swear word.
Alright guys, welcome back to Walao, the Gulo Sessions with Otto and JC. And
yeah,
right
yeah.
now, online, we have my good friend, Isaac Chu. Isaac, can you hear me, bro?
Yes, sir.
Yay.
Thanks for having me. What's up, BFM gang?
Alright.
Love from Singapore.
Yes, my friend Isaac Chu from Singapore. How are you doing, man?
Doing good. Happy to be here. Happy to just catch up with you and be able to share my love for all this cool music that's coming out here with you guys all the way over there. So just happy to be here.
Yeah.
Just been chilling the whole day, you know.
Yeah, we're happy to have you and happy that we managed to get the Zoom to work as well. All right. So to start off, Isaac, please introduce yourself to everyone in New Zealand who might be listening right now.
My name is Isaac Chu. I'm a Singaporean musician, gig promoter, occasional music journalist, and booking agent sometimes. I'm in a psychedelic rock band called Cactus Cactus. We're very influenced by bands like Queens of the Stone Age, a little bit of King Giz in there, and influenced by all the cool music that's been coming out here out in Southeast Asia. Lots of Indonesian bands that we dig as well, and Malaysian bands. So that's me.
Yeah. So Isaac, you've been involved in pretty much every aspect of the Singaporean indie underground music scene that one could imagine. You know, as you just said, you're a musician, you've worked with multiple bands and your own. You're one of, you know, Singapore's most prominent organizers. You've worked with major labels and you've even been a DJ and done quite a bit of music journalism. So what are some of the most memorable experiences you've had working in the Singaporean and Southeast Asian music scene?
I think the most memorable ones for me are probably when I get to go on tour, be it as a musician or a tour manager, and just meeting different kinds of people from all walks of life, all being able to connect to music. It's been really beautiful, really fun. The most recent one was when Cactus Cactus, my band, went up for Tong Tong Fest up in KL. It became a smaller version of the original festival because of issues with the authorities. But it's still a lot of fun, and it was like the first day was the festival day we got to perform and just meet so many of these artists that we've looked up to for so long, like a Bub from Indonesia. We got to hang out with him. We got to catch Luna Dira from Malaysia. Machine Drum was headlining, and that was really cool as well. Machine Drum, the DJ, and like the first day was just like rock and roll and partying and everything. So we played our set. We played like a really early set, like maybe like 2:45 to 3 p.m. Like we started around 2:45. We finished by around 3:15. So we really didn't expect anyone to come down and catch our set. But it's really nice to see like maybe 200 people show up. And it was just a really good time. And we got to see like many of our friends' bands, like Malaysian bands, like The Filters, Golden Mammoth, Captain Trips, all these like really great indie bands from out in Malaysia just come and chill and hang, and got really just party till like 7 in the morning. But then the next day is just like the complete opposite. We went to KLCC in Kuala Lumpur, where we had they were having a card game convention. So it's like Magic the Gathering, Pokemon and all that stuff. And we just like went from like rock and roll kind of vibe to just like this whole like geeky kind of vibe, and that's really fun as well, just like experiencing these kinds of things and meeting all kinds of people at both the festival and the convention. I just say like being able to travel like and bring your music out there and discover new things, like really fun.
But that's not the first time you've played in Malaysia. Cactus have been to Malaysia quite a few times, right? So can you tell us about like why Malaysia is so special to you, and maybe some other like memorable experiences you've had playing other gigs there too?
I think just like culturally, we're so similar, like both Malaysians and Singaporeans. And also because it's a bit more free out there. You know, Singapore is pretty rigid, pretty draconian at times. So we can't cut loose as crazy as you guys over in New Zealand for sure. But when we go to Malaysia, it's the same. Like we're so similar, but at the same time, we can really cut loose. We really have a good time. And a lot of the music there is really inspiring. Bands like Captain Trips and The Kid which is another psychedelic rock band from KL. We went on a co-headline tour with them last May after we dropped our second EP, Life is Short. And that was the best time ever. We did 5-6 dates across different states in Malaysia, including a festival at a camping ground in this place called Kuala Kuru Baru out in Selangor. It's about 2 hours from the city. And it's just like gorgeous mountains and this lake that just like perfectly reflected the sky. And we like just over the years playing our music. And it's just a great time. People in Malaysia have been so hospitable. The music's just so moving and inspiring. Bands like, if I were to shout out, like Captain Trips and the Kid, those guys are awesome. Like King Giz kind of style, psych rock with some kind of dance and house elements thrown in there because they're party people. The Filters, which is like indie rock with a dash of prog. Sweet Ass, which is this like really hard-hitting garage rock band. Just all bands that I really love playing with and love hanging out with. They're just so fun to be around. That's why I guess we've done quite a fair bit of shows in Malaysia. We did a tour, we played a couple of festivals and a few one-off shows. So yeah, Malaysia's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were playing quite a few of those tracks earlier. Yeah, we started off with a song by Sweet Ass. But going back to yourself, can you tell us about how your musical journey began and how it progressed to the point that you're at now?
Let me think. So I think I started out like most people playing in high school, where I didn't have much going on for me. It's kind of like awkward, cringy phase, you know, like most 14, 15 year olds go through. And then I was just kind of thinking like, how can I be cool and get girls to like me and stuff? And there was that was the school battle of the bands, all right? And I was like, man, I have no friends. I don't know what's going on. Just kind of a weird geeky kid. So I just started trying to form a band, playing during lunchtime. So during lunch breaks or recess breaks, there's a little jamming room at the high school I was at. It's called Garden International School. And I did high school in KL, actually. So maybe that's why I can keep going back to play in Malaysia. And we cover like Green Day, Panic at the Disco, stuff like that. But I really fell in love with music when a friend showed me The Strokes. So I think at that time, the record that he showed me was Angles. And the songwriting on that was just like mind-blowing to me. Like, songs like Under the Cover of Darkness, where the guitars are just kind of calling and responding to each other. All the parts, the instrumentation, everything's so different, yet they kind of like fit in this kind of perfect harmony. They're kind of speaking to each other and the vocal melodies and the lyrics. And just how cool The Strokes were, right? Just like, they're just like, I don't care, man. I'm Julian Casablancas, man. You know, like, that's not a really good impression, but, you know. So, like, yeah, The Strokes just got me deep into like songwriting and like, hey, I want to be a rock star, dude, or whatever, you know, because you're 14 or 15. And then that slowly just evolved into like appreciating and learning about new things. Then I moved back to Singapore for like pre-uni and the army and eventually college. And then got to form a couple of bands. Got to keep going for like underground shows and indie stuff because that's all you could get. Took my acoustic guitar, went around and tried to play open mics as much as possible, meet as many people. And then one thing led to another. I eventually started running my own shows because my band got rejected by Singapore's largest alternative music festival. So there's this festival called Bay Beats. It's a free alt and indie music festival every year. And we went for the auditions because they have a select group of younger new bands that they try and get every year for this program called the Budding Bands Program. We didn't get in, but I ended up hosting a show where we got all the bands that got rejected and ran our own little festival called Nay Beats. And then I realized, hey, I could actually run my own shows and make a little money on the side and make this dream shows happen with like lineups of like artists I wanted to see play together. Right. So I started just being a promoter on the ground, with my collective Big Dub, which Otto actually you were a part of for a couple of years when you were here in Singapore. And yeah. That was a lot of fun. We started out running just like these little hole in the wall, 50 to 100 people kind of shows. Then we moved on to touring bands. Mm. And then we went one full circle, and in 2021, we got to guest program for Bay Beats for that year, the Bay Beats 2021 festival. So we started out by clowning Bay Beats and just kind of like doing our own thing because we were rejected to working on the festival about 3 years later.
Mm.
And then during COVID, when we couldn't run any shows because of the restrictions, we moved into an editorial kind of space. I don't know what it's like in New Zealand, but we don't really have like music blogs or music magazines or any kind of form of like editorial coverage in Singapore. And to a certain extent, most of Southeast Asia doesn't have very strong music journalism.
Right.
So we got to cover that space for about 2 years. Then when COVID ended, we shifted back into the gig promotion space. Then I formed my band Cactus Cactus around that time. And we put out two EPs and we've toured Malaysia. And we're working on another record right now. And we're hoping to tour Indonesia and Australia next year. And who knows, maybe New Zealand as well, if it makes sense, you know, from Australia. Yeah, yeah. And like I said, the sound is very influenced by bands like Queens of the Stone Age, bands like King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, but also the current wave of like really dope post-punk bands like Fontaine's DC, Amon the Sniffers, Idols, stuff like that. But we're still figuring it out, you know, just still kind of like exploring what it means to be like Southeast Asian, what it means to be Singaporean, taking in all these influences and putting our own spin or our own stories to it. So that's my band. Then I've had the blessing to work at the major labels. I was an intern at Sony Music with Otto, right, Otto?
Yes.
And that was the best time. That was the best time. We had so much fun. We worked with pop artists here in Singapore, like Cesare and Benjamin King. Then I was an A&R consultant for a short period of time at Universal Music here in Singapore.
Hey.
Then, and then I got to work for Escape, which is a non-profit funded by the Singaporean government for youth empowerment, where I made a music festival called Music Day Out happened. I did a 30-year anniversary show of hardcore punk music in Singapore called Lion City Hardcore 30. I started a music exchange program where we brought artists from Southeast Asia to play in Singapore. And in exchange, they will host our young Singaporean bands to play in their home countries. So, but I just left that role and now I'm just chilling for a while before I figure out the next thing, doing some freelance tour management and also just finally having the time to sit down and work on my own record. So that's me and what I've been up to. Yeah.
Dang, yeah. You've been so like full on. Hey, sorry, this is the other host, JC, by the way. I honestly wanted
What's up, JC?
Yeah. Hi. Like, Ono has been hyping you up to me forever. So I'm like, hearing all of you, what you've been saying has been so influential to me because as an independent artist who's a Southeast Asian artist here in New Zealand, is pretty good to hear what you have to say as well. And that kind of leads up to my next question. Like, do you think that in Singapore and Malaysia, like, do you think that certain artists feel underrepresented in certain scenes or certain places? Like, you have to fight for your spot for, I don't know, getting up to that mainstream platform in performing?
I think it's really what's on trend, like where you're living, right? Mm. Like, I hear from Otto, like, you guys have so much drum and bass in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But if you were to spin drum and bass here, it's like, it's not, you won't get as many gigs, you know, it's going to be a bit more difficult to survive, a bit more difficult to put your name out there, just because, I guess, different tastes and different audience profiles. But I guess that's where, like, finding an international audience comes in, finding a regional audience comes in. Considerations of touring, being present in your music community and your music niche online as well. Yeah.
Do you have anything to add, Otto?
I was gonna head into our next question, which is actually if we could talk a little bit about Big Duck. You know, you did mention, you know, what it was, and you hinted a little bit about how that came about, but can you just tell us a bit more about Big Duck and the story behind Big Duck and, you know, what you guys, you know, represent in the Southeast Asian music landscape?
I think it's always evolving. So if you were to ask me what Big Duck is right now, I wouldn't be too sure, because end of the day, it's just music collective where we try and empower musicians on the ground up. We try and look for what's interesting, what's cutting edge, what's really moving and exciting, and just giving it a platform, making these shows happen, making these tours happen, doing interviews or profiles so that more people can learn about the music or have a greater in-depth understanding. So like I said, we started out as a gig promoter kind of collective, and I think we still are mainly that. So just trying to make these experiences, really unique experiences, happen for artists you might not have heard of before. We actually have this series called B4, which I worked with Otto before he left. So it's like the word before, but it's like B and then the number four, B4. it's kind of a little pun, because it's like we are booking these artists before you know them, or you know, before they get big. And at the same time, we book four artists on that lineup, and we do it like we do it in a stripped back intimate setting at unconventional spaces. So we've done it at a tattoo parlor, we've done it at a co-working space, stuff like that. And it's been quite a fulfilling journey to see, like, we've given a bunch of artists their first shows and seeing them grow and evolve into like something much larger, be part of the music scene, go on tour, put out the hit record. Most recently, this artist named Regina Song, who was part of our B4 series, blew up on, over here in Singapore, and I think quite a few places. She's now at 2 million monthly listeners on Spotify, which is so insane to me, because we got her when she was like way smaller, you know, before she even had like, maybe she only had like two singles out when we booked her. But we saw the potential, and I think like giving her these kinds of shows like so early on gave her the confidence to step out and try new things. And we try and do the same for as many artists as we can, you know. Look at the potential or where they can be rather than where they're at right now, because it's just so important for artists to be able to actually have some onstage experience, actually have an experience interacting with an audience, so that when bigger opportunities come, or when, you know, like they can book for festival or whatever, they've already had that experience and practice, and they're a bit more assured.
So as a promoter, you know, whether it's for, you know, smaller like B4 style gigs, or some of Big Duck's larger gigs, or even some of the events that you've held at Scape, you know, what is it that you look for in the artists that you platform and put on? Is there a specific kind of genre or style that you look for, or is it a different set of characteristics?
I don't think we've been very genre specific. I think it's about plugging gaps for me. So I'm just looking at being in Singapore, being in Southeast Asia, depending on what context I'm working, like, okay, where are the gaps? I'm never going to run like an emo show or something like that, because it's so popular here in Singapore, like every week there are a bunch of emo bands playing all the time. But I'm looking at, okay, like, I guess there aren't as many post-punk bands happening in Singapore. How about we push that up a bit? There aren't as many hyper-pop shows happening in Singapore. What artists can we get on to kind of explore that sound? And there are even some genres where there isn't even a scene behind it. Something like city pop, or something like vaporwave, right? In that kind of vapor scene, there's like maybe like one artist here in Singapore. So if that's the case, then how do I program something where I can involve these artists, expose audiences to these kinds of sounds, but program them alongside artists and vibes and whatnot that are complementary to that? So maybe I'll book like a house act or something that could fit the vibe, or maybe even like experimental noise kind of thing that could fit the vibe. So I'm just generally looking at like what's exciting, what's fresh, and how can I get everyone a little more loose and open-minded, and just come down and have a good time. And yeah.
I honestly love that, because like, again, If I was in that city with you right now, I would be like asking you, hey, can I get into that festival? Hey, can I get into that gig? Because honestly, like finding opportunities to put yourself out there in a like live setting is really hard these days, especially if you're just starting out. So hearing from you about that is actually pretty great.
Dude, it's tough, man. Yeah, it's
surely
tough.
I come down and just like play a show with you, or like, I don't know, like I'm just plugging myself right now.
Come to Singapore, bro.
Yeah.
We'll sort you out.
So why is it important for you to platform underrepresented artists and artists that people may not have heard of?
I think I'm just trying to feed into the idea that I think the world would be a lot more kinder, a lot more fun if everyone had a bit more curiosity, you know, or a bit more open-mindedness to just delve head in into something they're uncomfortable or unfamiliar with. So it's about making that kind of feeling accessible, because once someone understands that, once they've had a taste of, hey, I actually do like coming to gigs and I actually do quite like discovering something new, or like this, I've never heard of this. I thought I didn't like it. Now I think I might like it. It just kind of opens up a whole new mindset where you have music lovers or just passionate gig goers like yourselves, you know, like you guys, where you're just part of something bigger than yourself now. You're actively contributing to artists by buying the merch, by going to shows, and the artists are able to make cooler, doper stuff or create their art in a way that's a bit more sustainable. We can just keep giving and just keep experiencing these kind of like life-changing experiences together, because it all takes one aha moment, right? Like, I don't know about you guys, but every now and then in my life, I'll have a little aha moment. Like, I'm at a live show and then something makes me go like, wait, like, I didn't know I could feel like this. I didn't know I could move like this. I didn't know you could do that or sound like that, or I didn't ever consider this. And then it just kind of like, okay, like now I want to do this, or I want to keep coming back. I want to make my own music or whatever that is. You know, I think music has a funny way of kind of making us reconsider things and approach life in a bit more of a holistic and optimistic fashion, I'd say. Yeah.
So I know that the next thing I wanted to ask is, you know, why is Singapore and Southeast Asia a region that's so important for you? Like, I know you're from Singapore and you've grown up in the region, but like, what else about the region and Singapore is special? And yeah, what else about Singapore and Southeast Asia is special to you?
I think it's so funny because you kind of answered the question in the question, which is it's just because I live here, dude. You know, I'm sure like if I was in New Zealand or whatever, I'd be like, yo, man, I gotta check out this New Zealand thing, you know. But at the same time, because I'm here, I'm grateful to be here because it's uniquely our own, you know, as Southeast Asian artists. It's uniquely Singaporean in certain aspects. And we have a lot of growing to do. One of the most exciting things, like, I'm not going to talk about the music here, but I'm going to talk about the history and the context of creating music in Singapore. One of these, the interesting things is that Singapore did not have original music for a long time because we had a lot of dope bands in the 60s, right? Like the Siglap 5, like the Quest.
Thunderbirds, I think.
Thunderbirds. Yeah. I'm not sure about that, but there are, like, artists like Shirley Nile and the Silver Screens. But all of that got kind of shut down for 30 years from the late 60s all the way to the late 80s because the government was afraid of the gang culture or drug culture and all these things they said music would bring. And as a nation that only recently gained independence, as a nation that, you know, has no natural resources and is tiny and got ousted from Malaysia, they prioritize like this, like rapid development, this productivity, this kind of like do or die survival kind of mentality, and they were not having anything like I think in that time period, long hair was banned for men, you know, because it's like not right or whatever. It's so absurd now, but it's like back then, it's like that's what they decided to do, that to ensure that the nation could survive. There's stories of like Led Zeppelin coming by and then just getting turned away because it's like, yo, like, you guys got long hair, man. But like, they don't care that you guys, they were like rock gods. They're in the presence of rock gods, you know? But yeah, so only in the late 80s, then bands like Zircon Lounge, The Oddfellas started to come up, and that was the genesis of Singaporean original and indie music as we know it today. I mean, there were a few other artists and bands in the 70s and all, but it was so difficult to perform live, perform original music. So given that context, our scene and our sound is so young, and we have so much growing and developing to do to catch up to the rest of the world in terms of finding our own sound and our own vibe. But that's also, on the flip side, that's also the exciting part for me, because now me and the generation that I see coming up are able to be pioneers in creating a Singapore sound and creating something unique and adding something to the conversation in the larger, like, international conversation about music. So yeah, I'd say that's the most exciting thing for me. It's kind of like we're at the turn of something, and the sounds and the stories that are coming out of Singaporean music now are unique and fresh, and like, yeah, I guess it's the pioneering batch now. Like, we are amongst the first that are breaking different boundaries and rules for what Singapore music could be. Yeah.
And what about the wider Southeast Asian region? Is there anything that makes Southeast Asia unique that audiences here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, or in Australia, or wherever, should be paying attention to it?
Well, like, it's interesting to see how different cultures take something like rock and roll, or something like electronic dance music, and recontextualizes it within their own kind of stories and context. So it's interesting to see, like, for example, a recent band that I've been turned on to, Sri Raja Rockers. Sri Raja Rockers. So that's S-R-I-R-A-J-A-H, Sri Raja Rockers. And it's a reggae band from Thailand. But just something about that sound and that vibe, like, feels so different, you know, from something you'd hear from reggae acts you hear, like, in a more Western setting. Or a band like No Good, which we hosted, remember, Otto? A punk rock band which takes the stories, the language, and the sounds of their Kelantanese culture, which is a Malaysian state and a Malaysian dialect, which even most Malay people don't understand. But it brings this, like, really unique, fresh, and energetic, raw kind of power to an edge to the music. So yeah, super, super dope when that happens. And a country like Indonesia, where they've had that music development, like, instead of being like Singapore, where there's just no music, it's so funny because in Indonesia, they just straight up, they banned Western music for a while. Do you know that? Like, you could not, like, they banned importing music. So you couldn't bring your Beatles and all this stuff over. So what happened is everyone has to make their own music, or try and, like, you know, like, artists start to thrive and do their own thing before Western music got reintroduced. So the sounds that you get out of Indonesia, and because the country is so big, most Indonesian rock stars don't even need to go out of Indonesia. They can just play to an Indonesian crowd, and they're rock stars and massive and big, and the crowds are playing to hundreds of thousands of people every week, you know? So yeah, I'd say, like, because of that context, when you listen to the music, like, it's just so much fresh stuff. Artists like the Panduras doing their own unique take on, like, a surf rock kind of sound. Artists like Bach, who takes that music history, Indonesian music history, on one of his records, and samples Indonesian music to create the beats and you know, have his own kind of, like, sound. And yeah, like, acts like Gabba Modus Operandi doing their own kind of crazy take on Gabba music, and you know, being so getting such critical acclaim that even artists like Bjork have worked with them. So yeah, I just say, like, there's just so much to be excited about if you're willing to explore. But I feel that's the same way for anywhere. I think if you look for something dope, you'll find it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Now, as we're coming up to the end of this interview, and what does the future look like for you? You know, whether it's with Cactus Cactus, Big Duck, or any of your other many ventures, is there anything that you have in store for the future that you'd like to tell us about?
I'm working on a record, so...
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, it might be a while before it's out. So my band, Cactus Cactus, at Cactus Cactus Band on Instagram. If you dig all those stuff and all those bands we talked about earlier, stuff like Queens of Stone Age, stuff like Idols, you might dig us and Bowie, I guess. Like, Bowie is a big influence on the way we write. We're working on a record and we're hoping to tour after that. Probably will come out in the first half of next year. I curate kind of like a playlist called Sailin on Sea, and the sea stands for Southeast Asia, for this local radio platform here in Singapore called MediaCorp Indigo. So you can check it out like on my Instagram as well, at Isaac Chiu 218, ISAACCHIW218. If you want to get a little taster of like all the cool music that I've been talking about in Southeast Asia, I also just generally do content with artists that come by in Singapore, be it like record shopping segments like Amoeba Records or interviews and stuff like that. Yeah, so I'd say I've generally been working on those stuff. And if you are an artist and you're looking to get into the Southeast Asian space, be it touring Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, or even want to explore stuff like Cambodian music or something, I'm always happy to oblige. You know, just hit me up, Isaac Chiu, Isaac Yip, and I'd be happy to just see how we can work together, you know? Like, yeah.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.